Erica, I don't need to tell you the past 2.5 years. I mean, what on earth? Nobody has prepared us for this. Even those of us who specialize in uncertainty and crucibles and chaos, and the leaders who keep trying to inspire and make progress, we're mostly tapped out. So it's a lot, and yet many of us need to keep going for the sake of our communities, our clients, our staff, our students, our planet. And so how do we do it? So today on The Behaviorist, Eric and I are breaking it down to the basics. How do we keep putting one foot in front of the other when there's no gas in the tank and the world around us is falling apart every day? Welcome to The Behaviorist with Work Wisdom, where we help you adopt high-performance mindsets, behaviors, communication, and culture. I'm your host, Kedrin Crosby. Our intention for The Behaviorist podcast is to share accessible, concrete practices that you can weave into your whole life to begin a shift toward joy and meaningful achievement. I absolutely love all the minutes that I ever get to spend with my friend and colleague, Dr. Erica McCray. Erica, how are you doing today?
I am doing well. God. It's great to be with you always.
So. Oh, that's so good. Well, you're truly an inspiration to me, and you help me keep putting one foot in front of the other. So I have to admit that today my feet are covered in Rothy pointy toe blush shoes based on you and Allie selling me on Rothy's last week. So loving them, sustainable fashion. Thank you for the tip.
The pointy toes are a gateway Rothy's item, so beware.
The gateway drug to Rothy's. Mm-hmm. What do we love so much about Rothy's? I mean, they're sustainable. They're comfortable.
They're washable. Yeah. And you just feel put together and like your feet are being hugged.
Yes, that's what it is. It feels like my feet are being hugged. That's so perfect for this idea of how do we keep putting one foot in front of the other. Maybe we should see if Rothy's wants to sponsor The Behaviorist.
I think they might be interested.
They might after
this.
Today for sure. Well, so I thought we should just have a frank and brief conversation about how to keep going with a genuinely authentic positive spirit when it does feel like the world is kind of collapsing all around us. And, you know, the fabric of normal society is unraveling. But how do we, as world changers, keep pushing forward? So part of it, I think, is the Great Resignation and then the fallout from the Great Resignation. And so, of course, we know from Gallup, there was a May 2022 bit of data that said 48% of the workforce is actively looking for a new job right now. Half. And so the Great Resignation is really, they're now calling it the Great Discontent. And we know that more than 50% of people leaving their jobs are reporting that it's because they didn't feel valued by their organization and they didn't feel valued by their manager. So in my mind, this puts an awful lot of weight on the role of the manager and the leader to stay strong, to keep valuing, to keep creating a sense of belonging. Marcus Buckingham in, it was May 2019, article in HBR called The Power of Hidden Teams. He said, of all the factors that create the experiences that distinguish the best teams, the most important is the actions of the team's leader and how he or she builds trust and gives attention. So again, even more duty, responsibility to those leaders and those managers to build trust, give attention, value others, create a sense of belonging. So so I'd like to get to some concrete practices for how we authentically resonate in positive ways. Sarah and I were talking about this last night over dinner, and we were starting to think about there's a few kinds of classifications of the great unraveling. So I want your opinions on this, and feel free to critique this compartmentalization of the messiness. But we were thinking maybe it makes sense to chunk out the unraveling so that we could think about which habits work for which bucket of hardship. So the first phenomena are those societal and slow burning in their unraveling. So we were thinking this is like COVID, maybe the overturning of Roe v. Wade, where we had some months, you know, we were hearing about these things. There were graphs that were showing up in our feeds, and there were quiet podcasts, and the Daily might start talking about it. And it helped us to digest it so that when it happened, it wasn't quite as shocking for us. So that was category number one. Does that one make sense to you?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So there are all kinds of hardships that we can think of that might fall into that bucket. Then we thought there was this second bucket, and these are these individual, very sudden, deeply shocking point in time efforts. So, you know, the murder of George Floyd, you know, the January 6th insurrection, we weren't prepared for those. There was no, you know, graphs or podcasts that were coming out ahead of time to prepare us for those. So I consider those to be more point in time, shocking, maybe traumatizing as well. Does that one make sense to you too?
Yes, but I would like to dig into that one a little bit.
Yeah, I want to too, because I don't know that George Floyd belongs in that one. You know, I think that we saw that coming. So that might be in a different category. But then I think there might be a third category. I hate to sound so negative, but it just is helping me to compartmentalize these a bit. So the third category might be societal, chronic, and shocking events like the mass murders that are happening, you know, almost daily in 2022. So they're societal, they're shocking, but they're ongoing. You know, I would say murders of people of color at the hands of those in power. I'm afraid that some of the Supreme Court rulings that may be unfolding might fall into this bucket too. So thoughts about any of this in terms of this sort of ad hoc system for chunking out the shrapnel that seems to be flying at us. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Absolutely. I was thinking even before the three categories in higher education, we haven't experienced the Great Resignation, but what has been called the Great Disengagement, with faculty not leaving their positions. Some are, but not leaving their positions, but engaging with their work in a more disconnected way. So a lot of the work depends on service that aren't directly related to teaching or research, and faculty are pulling back because they need to save some of their energy or focus their energies differently. And I think on a broader scale, we're all experiencing that. And I just hope it doesn't turn into a numbness that we have to maintain in order to survive. So I say all that to say, when we think about categorizing or compartmentalizing the mess, it's a means of trying to create order or regain some semblance of control or normalcy in the midst of chaos. And so I think the first category, the societal and slow burning and the unraveling, makes sense. The societal, chronic, and shocking sort of coming together makes sense. But the individual, sudden, and deeply shocking point in time events, I'm thinking about that in terms of personal losses that have happened in the midst of all of the other. So COVID was absolutely and continues to be societal and slow burning. But I think about the loss of family members as a result. And so that becomes the individual, sudden, and deeply shocking. And so the grief takes on a different tenor when we have those individual sudden and deeply shocking events occur in the midst of the slow burning unraveling. And so I don't know that we'll really understand the impact for years to come. Mm-hmm. I think the trauma that you're talking about shows up in every aspect of our lives, and it almost doesn't feel fair or possible to grieve in the ways that we need to in order to recover and be healthy on the other side. So I appreciate you and Sarah thinking about it in this way, because it might help us to think about, so what are the steps we can take as we try to recover from the pandemic, as we try to process individual losses in the midst of these sometimes shocking and in some ways not shocking. For instance, the insurrection was a manifestation of, you know, factors that had been at play all along. Not unlike the very public murder of George Floyd. We just happened to be still because of the pandemic. This has been happening all over the country for years. And so I just think the collective and sort of exponential effect of all of these, we need ways to process and make sense of it. And I think this is a helpful framing.
Yeah. You know, I'm interested in thinking through this, because as I'm hearing you talk, I'm hearing you say, how do we process it after it happens? How do we grieve from it? How do we recover from it? How do we heal from it? And I'm almost thinking, what if we try to steal ourselves? What do we do to not inoculate, but somehow ready ourselves for it, so that when it happens, the damage isn't quite so deep? So I don't know if it's possible. Maybe we need to think about both how do we steal ourselves and ready ourselves, strengthen ourselves, so that when it happens, we aren't knocked off our feet quite as badly, and we can still be standing and strong for those around us. But also, how do we grieve? How do we process? How do we heal after the fact? I think maybe there's maybe another podcast in this for us, Erica.
I do too.
Good.
I do too.
Good. Okay. Well, we think a lot in the world of leadership, we think a lot about the fact that, you know, our bodies, our brains were definitely not built to deal with this much negativity and uncertainty. Heidi Grant has done some really fantastic work in some habits that actually help us lead others when there is this kind of negativity, uncertainty. And we'll include a link to her HBR article where she talks about how do we lead with realistic optimism, because optimism that's not grounded in reality actually has a counter, a negative impact. What's it like to help lift the conversations up to the higher meaning? That's a way to inspire so that our teams can keep going and feel compelled to dig deep. And then the importance of candor during times of this much negativity and uncertainty, that, you know, especially when things are moving fast, we need to be honest and challenge each other directly, but care personally about each other. So those are some habits we know. We know that Richard Boyatzis and Annie McKee and Daniel Goleman, they did a lot of work on resonant leadership. So these are habits for how do we as leaders process what they call power stress, which is more unique than typical distress. It's when we are autonomous, we have heavy responsibility, and they basically say you must engage in this renewal cycle in order to stave off burnout when you have power stress. So that's weaving in mindfulness and hope in very concrete ways so that you can stay strong during the unraveling and the chaos. So, but I want to think about your habits today, and maybe I'll share some of mine too, but I want to make this really concrete for our listeners, because they are dealing with us every day. And I want to ask first about how you steel yourself for that first category of the hardships. Those are the ones that are societal, maybe slow burning in their unraveling. What are you doing to keep yourself strong so that you can continue to inspire and lead for those hardships? What do you have in your bag of tricks over there, Erica?
Well, at first, I know that I need to be aware of what's happening. So I try not to completely check out, mm-hmm. even when it becomes overwhelming. Mm-hmm. But managing awareness with self-preservation. So maybe I'm on social media for 15 minutes in the morning and 15 minutes in the evening. Mm-hmm. And making sure that I'm staying connected to those that I'm responsible to and for. Mm-hmm. So check-ins throughout the day, throughout the week, making sure that I am taking care of myself. One of my yoga teachers says, drink as you pour. Mm-hmm. So I really try to stay intentional about the time that I know that I need to be alone, to process, to recharge. I also think that the idea of mindfulness shows up differently for different people, and it doesn't have to be one way. And so I try to think about for the people that I work with and support, helping them to see that mindfulness for me might look one way and mindfulness for them might look a different way. So I practice mindful breathing. I do body scans when I start to feel tension in my body. So wiggling my toes and flexing my muscles and, counting my breaths, just so that I can stay grounded where I am. One of my colleagues says, stay where your feet are. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's physically looking around and noticing where I am as a part of the bigger picture, but to really focus in. So those are just some of the things that I do physically and sort of emotionally to stay aware, but to keep that balance between big picture awareness and internal awareness.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so staying aware. I really like how you're talking about limiting social media. You're not numbing out. You're not checking out entirely. You're doing some so that you're aware of what's going on, but you're not, what do they call it? Doom scrolling. You know, you're right. not spending too much time on it. You're checking in on a regular basis with those you are responsible for, and mm-hmm. you are taking care of yourself in specific ways. Drink as you pour. I love that. And then you're modeling mindfulness for those you lead. And I love that in each of these they can be operationalized in whatever ways make sense to that specific leader and the context in which they're leading. So they're general enough that they can be tailored for that person in their work life. What about that second category, which we're not totally sure about how much we like that second category, but I think that the second category, I think you're absolutely right that it is individual events that might happen to us that often are deeply shocking and can knock us to the ground, really. Mm-hmm. So in order to keep putting one foot in front of the other for those kinds of events, what do you do to stay positive in those moments when you feel like you've just been knocked to the ground? Or do you lay on the ground for a while?
I was going to say for this one, I would say that I don't necessarily steal myself. Mm-hmm. I grew up near the water. And so going to the beach was a daily thing during the summer. And if you've ever been caught out in a current, the lifeguards, the people who are strong swimmers will say, don't try to fight the current. Mm. Try to float into it. Mm-hmm. Just allow your body to relax. The water will carry you. Mm-hmm. And so I try to take that approach when it comes to those sudden, shocking, and I keep relating it to personal loss, but leaning into waves of grief when they come, mm. allowing allowing my feelings to show up and to wallow in them for a while, whether it's laying on the ground, whether it's crying with family or friends, whether it's revisiting memories, pictures, whatever it is, so that when I'm in a situation that triggers an emotional response, those sort of repressed feelings that I've steeled potentially against don't come springing up. And that is from experience, trying to keep emotions down, trying to keep grief down, trying to keep other intense emotions down, and then they show up in unexpected places or at unexpected times. And so I try not to steal when it comes to that kind of experience. I try to float in it. I try to go with it.
And I know that that must make you even more authentic as a leader, that people see you floating in it and they can see your feeling your feelings and letting the water carry you during those times. So we know that we want authentic leaders as well, and who can role model when we get knocked off our feet for us. So I love that idea that you're not going to steal yourself in that case. You're going to let the water carry you. So that's really great advice for any of our leaders that might be experiencing something like that right now. That third category, those societal chronic and shocking messes that are happening. When you think about being a leader and putting one foot in front of your other, do you have any kind of phrase or mantra or a habit or a practice that helps you get through those? Is there anything that comes to mind in that case, rather than, you know, the ones that we've talked about in the other two buckets?
I absolutely do. I love to read across genres. And so if I can, I'd like to share two. And one is an Audre Lorde quote where she says, caring for myself is not self-indulgence. It is self-preservation. And that is an act of political warfare. And that to me reminds me that there will be times when I have to step back to recharge so that I can fight another day. And in the current climate, it feels like every day I'm reminded, okay, you know, go for your walk. That self-preservation. Take your nap, that self-preservation. Have your quiet time in the morning, because that is necessary in order to continue at the pace that we're facing right now. So that's one. The other is Octavia Butler. And one of her quotes is, there's nothing new under the sun, but there are other suns. And so for me, that suggests that we aren't experiencing anything that hasn't happened in the past. It just has a slightly different flavor. But this isn't all there is. And if we keep going, we can reimagine, recreate, transform, et cetera.
Oh, my goodness. Both are so inspiring and exactly what we need to hear when we have those chronic and shocking hardships that we go through. I keep on thinking about this concept of anti-fragility. And so over the last 2.5 years, it's become more common to think about what is anti-fragile, how do we move through hardship in an anti-fragile way rather than just being resilient. You know, with resilience, you bounce back to the same. With anti-fragility, there is something about the chaos, the hardship, the even pain that strengthens us so that when we do come back, we're stronger, more creative. And so I've been thinking a lot about, is there a way to transform the chronic and shocking into something that teaches us and allows us to improve the system or even how we lead through it. So I like Nathan Furr. He was a professor. I guess he still is a professor at INSEAD. And he talks a lot about uncertainty and leaders who lead through uncertainty. And those leaders who have the most success are ones who reframe the chaos or the crisis and think, what can I learn here? How is this going to help us get stronger? How is this stress testing whatever we're going through as a society or as a business right now? So those reframes, I think, in addition to definitely caring for ourselves, taking our naps, taking our walks, and recognizing that there's nothing new under the sun, but there are other suns, then that allows us to keep reimagining and reinventing. So do you have any other concrete habits that you'd like to share with our listeners that they might want to weave into their own ways of genuinely staying hopeful in this time?
I would just reiterate movement and however that feels good and right in your body. Mm-hmm. We can hold so much anxiety and resentment and tension in our bodies, and that affects everything we try to do physically or intellectually or emotionally. And then stay connected to community. Mm-hmm. It's easy to burrow. Mm-hmm. Especially after having 2 years of practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're good at
being
it.
Isolated.
Yep, burrowing.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Those would be the two.
Yeah, that movement in whatever way works for you, and staying connected to community, finding your community and reaching out to them. Those are incredible practices. So, Erica, thank you so much for being part of this movement of helping world changers really enhance their individual and collective team performance. Thank you, listeners, for downloading The Behaviorist. We hope you'll subscribe. Reach out to us through our website, workwisdomllc.com, where you can enjoy Work Wisdom original content. You can buy our modern work tools now. You can ask questions, contact us, and make suggestions of topics you'd like us to explore in future episodes. So, as is our custom, we will leave you with some one-minute wisdom from Anthony DeMello. "How shall I help the world? By understanding it," said the master. "And how shall I understand it? By turning away from it. How then shall I serve humanity? By understanding yourself."